I deal with trauma in a way by painting a nostalgia-laden pretty picture, is to find the good in everything and to say, yeah, that was fucked up, but it taught me resilience. The only reason I write songs is because it's way cheaper than therapy. I spend a lot of time talking about like the really, really like lonesomeness, the loneliness of being in a house surrounded by love that I never thought I would have, you know? Yeah. And I'm so grateful for the life that I have today, but it's not enough. I think what I tend to do is say, because of where I came from, what I do have is far greater than I ever imagined. Mm-hmm. And it's not enough. I think trying to go back to those places of like what we didn't get when we were growing up, mm-hmm. we now have the ability to give ourselves.
Yes.
I tend to forget that like that 7-year-old that went through that is standing in front of these kids right now. I just want somebody to tell me I'm pretty and hold me.
Welcome to episode 10 of Success Unscripted. Today, I'm joined by John Johnson, who has one of the most interesting life stories I've ever heard. He grew up in extreme poverty, spending his early childhood in a cult before his parents were kicked out for being bad missionaries. Then they were homeless for a while before ending up in a broken down trailer with no heat. Now, John is a highly accomplished enterprise CSM with a family of his own and more friends than he can count. And yet, like the rest of us, he still struggles to find his place in this world. Today's episode is heartbreaking, it's heartwarming, and it might be my favorite one yet. As always, thanks for being here. I'm your host, Sarah Roberts, and you're listening to Success Unscripted. Tell me just a little bit about your background, like your childhood.
I was raised very conservative and very conservative Christian. So if you watch all of the documentaries on Netflix, like some pretty serious things similar to that, where we went and lived on a commune in East Texas and, you know, ate, you know, expired food from the food kitchens and all kinds of stuff. Like a lot of these things that were driven by a purpose that I truly believe was good intent, but was lacking in, I think, I don't know if intelligence is the right word, but really just like, you know, pay attention to the kids that you're not feeding. For a while, through, like I say, technically homeless, like we weren't like in a tent on the side of the road, but it was like friends' basements and couches and in the back of vans. And we eventually, my dad worked at a church and one of the pastors owned this big plot of land and he had this mobile home on the back 40 and it was like barely livable. I mean, I most of my life until I was 18, I had a hole in my floor underneath my bed that had a piece of plywood. Mm-hmm. And like, I mean, you could hear the rats and the raccoons underneath it. We didn't have heat. Like it was just, my parents loved me, but we were not, it was not a warm house. Right. And no, mm-hmm. nobody in my family went to college. And they really wanted a path out of this life that I think they felt stuck in. And so through like friends and like donors and things like that, I went to a very good private Christian school in Bothell, Washington. And I was surrounded by people that were very wealthy. There's a, and it really kind of taught me that like, you can kind of build what you want. I wound up going to college. I got a degree in music and kind of went a different path than I think most people thought I would as a broke musician. And I was like, you know what? I did this. I've been broke. I don't want to be broke. I want insurance. I want kids. I want a family. And I got into tech and that's really kind of what got me where I'm at. Like I've really, really struggled with like the confidence to have children in this world and to make sure that they have a roof over their heads. There's the most important thing is that these kids are fed and warm. I know what it was like to be cold and hungry, and I never want that for my kids. I will take any hit that I can to my ego and to my anything to make sure that they have shoes and that they have a shirt on their back and coats and that they have the things that they need. No matter what, there is something that you can do and right. that there is something that you can bring to the table. It may not be your biggest, wildest dreams, but when you have kids and when you have a family that you're building, it's not about your dreams anymore. It's about them, right? And I get all, I like to get emotional thinking about it. Like my daughter just came in and she got home from school and she gave me a hug and she went down and sat down and she does it every day. And it's like, I would give everything else up to make sure that is a moment that could happen every day.
We've already covered everything I wanted to talk about.
Short episode.
So you're at user testing and you are the quarterback, if you will, of user testing's largest account.
Yeah, it is the biggest, and it's the key. It's the cornerstone, right? Like, we do so much. And I'm also, like, I'm able to say I'm in the process of moving away from this account. Not that I've achieved everything that I wanted to achieve, or that, you know, every box has been checked, but there is a point now where the account is in a place where I'm super happy with it. And I think it needs something else, right? Mm. It gets to a point where the plane is in the air and you don't need to build any more planes, right? Yeah. And for me to really kind of grow in my career and to define success for myself, it is, how do I play in a bigger pond? Not just revenue wise, but impact wise.
Fuck, you're making this really hard for me.
That's my goal, Sarah.
I look at your life, I hear what you've been through and then where you are, and it's really fucking impressive. But I know that there's a piece of you that feels like it's not enough.
Yeah, yeah. How I have processed my trauma. And there's a lot. Like, I mean, when I was 3, my neighbor shot me and I was in the hospital. And yeah, like, legitimately, like, I have bullet wounds in my arm. And there's some, like, other really, really dark, like, physical, like, sexual abuse that has happened in my life that is deep. And one of the things that was clear to me is that I deal with trauma by painting a nostalgia-laden pretty picture. Mm-hmm. Is to find the good in everything and to say, yeah, that was fucked up, but it taught me resilience, or it taught me something, how to fight for myself, how to speak up, how to defend myself, these things that make it okay to go to bed with brokenness and to go to bed with, like, in it, like, really, really deep rooted scars that will never heal, that I deal with every single day. Yeah. And in all of my life, when I make really shitty decisions and when I hurt people and I hurt myself, I tend to want to say, I'm not that person anymore. I can find the lesson here. But when I reflect back as a storyteller and even as a songwriter, if you listen to, like, I say, like, the way that I write songs, the only reason I write songs is because it's way cheaper than therapy. I spend a lot of time talking about, like, the really, really, like, lonesomeness, the loneliness, yeah, of being in a house surrounded by love,
yeah,
that I never thought I would have, you know? Yeah. And I'm so grateful for the life that I have today, but it's not enough.
Yeah.
And it's not clean enough, and it's not perfect enough, and it's not, yes, holy enough.
Yes.
And I think what I tend to do is say, because of where I came from, what I do have is far greater than I ever imagined. Mm-hmm. And it's not enough. I spend so much time thinking that I'm making the wrong decision that I rarely have the time to celebrate the decision that I'm making. Mm. And we lost so much in the pandemic. The boundaries between personal and professional got fucking smashed together in a way. Everybody's going to work in their underwear. And, like, you're seeing people in their lives, in their messy lives. It's not pretty and it's not clean. I don't think that people understood that they were implicitly giving people access to that part of their lives simply by going to work in a different way.
Right, right.
So they didn't, there was no, like, hey, we're going to go work remote now. So I need you to make sure that you don't have anything inappropriate on your posters, that you don't, you know, like, nobody taught us how to do that. We just,
right,
put on our face and went to work. Right. And I mean, I actually think about this too. When I talk to customers, it's like, I'm a different person than I am to my family. And I edit some stories because I don't want to go too deep. Right. But then, like, I get off and I'm like, let me tell you the real stuff. Right. And there's this thing of just like,
Well, and that's what I was, because John, like, you were a great podcast guest, but that's not what I want.
Yeah.
You know, and I have a tendency, because of my anxiety, like, I don't have a filter. And I always used to say, like, I love that I don't have a filter, because then you know exactly what I'm saying. And, like, my husband, like, is so wonderful and, like, just a perfect match for me, because I am a lot. But I think what, like, the good part is that, like, yeah, I am always showing up exactly how I am. Like, I am who I am in every single which way. And a lot of people don't like it. And, you know, learning to love myself as I am, like has been a process. So like, I think that's why I've been so successful as a recruiter is because when I have conversations with people, it's what do you want out of your life? What do you want in the next couple of years? And does that match with what this employer can offer? And then coaching them when they're in interviews, for the most part, I'm like, God damn it, just be yourself. Because if you don't cut through the bullshit, you're never going to know if you're going to connect.
I really think there's an over-coaching that happens, that there is an over-preparation that happens. It's like the ones that stick out are the humans. We'll go deep here, and this is the truth. Up until 2 years ago, I had legal marijuana available to me for like 15 years, right? And I self-medicated often. So fast forward to moving to North Carolina, I hadn't had weed in like 6 months. And I had, like, I went to the emergency room because I thought I was having a stroke. I was seeing the spheres, the halo spheres. My mouth went numb. I couldn't speak. I couldn't read. I was in a free fall. I got rushed to the ER, called my boss, and was like, oh, I can't have that. I could not communicate. And then I'll never forget this moment. The nurse says, okay, some things are going to happen and it's going to terrify you, but they need to happen. And they called out over the entire hospital, code blue, stroke. And 10 people rushed, grabbed me, took me into an MRI machine, grabbed needles in every vein that they could, started getting every test possible. I got an MRI. They did my entire blood workup within 30 minutes of me getting there. Because if you've ever had a stroke, or if you know anybody who does, it's about timing, because it's a blood clot that is like crawling up into your brain. It could kill you. And luckily, it wasn't a stroke. And then finally, the nicest woman that I've ever met came in and was like, how do you deal with anxiety? I was like, what do you mean? Like, I think what you saw was like a migraine, number one, like a very, very severe migraine that was driven by a panic attack from severe anxiety disorder. Like, has anything changed in your diet? And I said, I stopped smoking weed 6 months ago. And she goes, oh, well, I know what to do now. Starts and I was weed. Like, we need to legalize weed in North Carolina. And she's like, I can't do that. So what I'm going to give you, and she gave me a medication, Cetraline, and it's not perfect. And when they told me that, I said, I can pinpoint 10 or 11 times in my life where I had to get off of the road and pull over because I was having a panic attack and I didn't know what was going on. Or I'm on a flight and I'm having like a massive anxiety related accident and I just think I'm an asshole. I'm like, what is going on? And it's like, no. Like all of your synapses are firing at the same time and your fight or flight is telling you that a lion is going to eat you. Like, God damn it. Why didn't I go to the doctor 15 years ago to figure this out? Because now I have the tools and I have the medication. I was on site with a customer in San Francisco 6 months ago or so. And I'm sitting in our biggest customer's office with the VP of customer experience at one of the biggest companies in the world. And I'm like, I have to go lay down in a dark room for 6 hours now. But I knew what it was. If I didn't know what it was, I would have suffered through it instead of, hey, I got the people on the ground. They're going to do what they need to do. Nothing's going to be impacted. And I'm going to go take care of myself.
Thank you for having the courage to share that because it's so soul crushing to have a panic attack at work.
Yeah.
You know, like I it's happened to me so many times and there is this like physical pain inside my body that like,
yeah,
that leads to suicidal ideation because it's so uncomfortable. And I'm
absolutely
like, I literally just want this to stop.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to just never be that way.
I never want to be seen as a liability by my employer.
Right.
And I never want my coworkers to be like, oh, we have to give special attention to John because he has this thing. The other side of it is every fucking person has something in them that makes them innately human, which means they are flawed, that there is something that has been broken or has been rebuilt or is a struggle or is a passion or that is driving them into an outcome that could be seen as negative if it's not surrounded by empathy and love. And one of the things that I struggle with, especially as I'm getting, like I turned 42 this year and I still feel like I'm a 12-year-old trying to figure out how to live in this world because I'm surrounded by people and I'm having these very, very intense moments. And I just want someone, like I say this, like, I just want somebody to tell me I'm pretty and hold me, just to have that moment so that you get through it and you can be like, we're human. Let's breathe.
Yeah.
And then let's get productive. There's a woman at my work, her name's Lisa Lloyd. And she said, it's not that you shouldn't give your whole self. It is that you need to make sure that who you are giving your whole self to can accept your whole self. And I need to be able to know and pay attention to who I can let all of my guards down and who I shouldn't, because it may hurt them. It may be taken incorrectly from me. And it's not that I can't have these moments. It's that you're not ready to have this moment with me.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say this, but.
Oh, just say it.
Well, so yesterday I had one of those moments. So I'm like investing in these people to help me with my podcast. And like, there were a lot of deadlines that were missed. And like, you know, this is a lot of money out of my own pocket. And I'm also trying to manage all these different things. And I was just unsatisfied with like a bunch of different stuff. And I get on the phone with the woman who is kind of managing the whole project. And I just, I was upset. And there was that energy there and I hadn't taken enough of a like breath before. And I got off the call and I just felt like, who am I to be like preaching that you should be respectful of other people and the, you know, workplace trauma and all this shit, when I just got off a call with someone who's working for me.
Yeah.
And if I were in her shoes, I'm sure I would have cried. And I apologized. And it's like in those moments, I think that are the hardest to have that self-love.
Yeah.
At least for me, is when I've unintentionally.
Oh, I don't think that I love myself. it's something that I am working on. And Alex actually said this on the podcast.
My favorite question to ask during a one-on-one is like, how's Sarah the person?
Like, how's Alex the person doing?
Yeah.
We have to do that now because we are coming to each other in each other's bedrooms.
Right.
In the place where we are the safest, but also we are now making ourselves vulnerable because you see it all. I think there is something about the truest form of self. Like what you said is that like feeling comfortable with being authentic. And I don't, because I feel like my authenticity is a risk. And I think my natural alignment is to go depressive and to go to that suicidal model and to go to that, I'm never going to be enough. And it would just be better if I was gone. And now that I have kids and I have a teenager, my eldest is 18. One of the superpowers that I think a parent has is dealing with these things in public with your kids. Within reason. Like I don't necessarily self-edit too much with Connor, my 18-year-old, but I talk to him about a lot of this stuff, about the voices in your head that say you're not enough and how to like identify that that's actually not you. That's just a reflection of your experiences. Right. And if I had a father who did that for me, I would have been able to say, oh, this is normal. I'm not unique. Everybody has these feelings, because they all do, in different ways and different processes. But I'm spending so much time trying to find the things in me that maybe I hate. And going back to the beginning is like, what do I love about those things, right? How do I paint those in a way that says, I really, really don't like that I have to be the center of attention. I don't like the fact that after I live in a place for a couple of years, I can walk into any coffee shop and 40 people know me. But like, I say those things, but in the same time when I say those things, they're the things that so many people love about me. They're the things that like people see me as a connector. And it's like, oh man, I don't know where to start. So I'm going to call John and he's going to find me a drummer and he's going to tell me what coffee shop to go to, because I'm in Lisbon and I've never been here before. And he's got a spreadsheet. Or I just need a couch to crash on in New York. John, do you know somebody? Of course I know somebody. Here you go. And I've done that time and time again. And I look at that as, I hate that about myself, because I make myself the center of attention, which means, when you make a mistake and when you do the wrong thing, thousands of people see it. And I think that there's a part of me that really struggles because I know that I've made mistakes and I've hurt people and I've made poor decisions in my adult life, that there's a part of me that is like, God, somebody's going to leave a comment on LinkedIn to be like, well, you were an asshole to this, or you got drunk one time and let me tell you what you did. You know, I'm just afraid of those moments of realizing that the human that I was, that isn't existent anymore because I've grown and we've all changed, and somebody's going to be like, but that's who I see you as now. Actually, another story. I dated this girl named Marcy in Seattle. I was working at Starbucks. I really, really liked this girl. Cute little brunette. We had like similar backgrounds. We went to church together, and it was like 6 or 7 months. And by the, I wound up breaking up with her. And it was, I did the most assholish thing that you could ever do. And I told her exactly why I was breaking up with her. And I thought being honest was the right thing. And to this day, 20 years later, this is one of the things that I would change. Is she did not have, in my opinion, at the time, the most exciting life. I was a touring musician. You know, I was going around doing all of these awesome things. And she was just a nice, safe, you know, girl at home reading books and cooking dinner. And it was, I loved it. But at the same time, like, I also had that, like, this is boring as shit. Like, we're not doing anything. Like, what are we doing? And I told her that I was bored. And that's why I was breaking up with her. And it was the worst thing. That's not the worst thing I've ever done. And we're not going to go into that. But it was like, it is one of those things that I know it was horrible for me to say and for her to hear. And I think about it to this day. And she's happily married with a bunch of kids, according to the Instagram that I stalk every 6 months. But you know, like one of those things, funny aside, not my wife and I, when we were dating at the time, we went out to this concert, of this local band that we loved called Hey Marseille. It's one of my favorite bands at the time. And we were like in the front row, we knew all of the songs, and me and my wife had just started dating. It was my birthday and I was very, very intoxicated. And me and Rachel, who is now my wife, I like to say that because it makes this next part a little bit less shitty, but like, we're like making out like in the venue, just like all over each other, just sloppy. Right. And I look to my right and who's standing there? Marcy. And she's with her boyfriend at the time. And she has this look on her face like, you are a shit show, John. Oh my God. Like, I know in her mind, she's like, I dodged a hell of a bullet with that.
Oh yeah. I mean, that was like the universe being like, here you go, Marcy.
Yeah. Stop worrying about that shithead who said you were boring at a Starbucks on Green Lake that one time.
Oh, that one's for her.
That one's for her. Yeah. Yeah. But part of me wants to be like, I married her. It's okay. Like it's okay. It was okay.
Yeah. I mean,
we have beautiful kids now and life's okay, but.
Yeah. But I mean, I think that's what self-love is, right? Is like loving yourself for all the things. It's like, which narrative do you want to believe? And you can berate yourself for wanting to be the center of attention and whatever, or celebrate the fact that like you have this skill of connecting people and people gravitate towards you, and there's a lot of good in the world that you can do. And so I think it's holding that, like, you know, yes, I didn't show up the way I wanted to in that conversation yesterday, but I'm also like, I'm doing the best I can and I'm constantly learning. And as long as like my heart is in the right place, like, I think that's what matters. And like, you try not to hurt people. And then if you do, then you work through it and you know, apologize. But yeah, it's like, it's very easy to lean on the, like, what am I doing wrong? What's wrong with me? And so it is, I think, a reframing exercise where, you know, my anxiety and my depression, like, I really try to like see that as a positive and a strength, because it keeps me from doing stuff that isn't in line with my goals or my values. I mean, it just, it sucks. And like, and hurting other people is the hardest one to get through.
Yeah. Yeah. I tend to want to know like the root cause, like, what did I do? Because like, one of the things that my therapist in the past taught me is like, if somebody's coming to you with those things, and I'm sure you've heard this too, is like, are you saying this to be hurtful or to be helpful? And it also works internally. Like if you're spinning up in your head and you're like attacking yourself, it's like, am I saying this because I want to beat myself up or because I want to drive growth, right? Mm. And that always helps. And I ask that too. Like if somebody's coming at me, it's like, are you trying to be hurtful or helpful? Because if they're being hurtful, fuck off. Like I'm going to leave. You can right. feel your things, but I don't need to listen to this, right? Right. But actually, I had another recent moment because we're just going to keep dredging up the past, right? And another recent moment where a friend of mine, who I used to be very, very close with, somebody was like, this person said this about you. And I was like, I haven't talked to this person in 20 years. This person doesn't know who I am. It's like, he is self-serving. He's only out for himself. Be careful because he's going to take what he wants. You know, he's going to get the doors open and he's going to leave you. And I was like, oh my God, like, is that what people think of me? And I like validate. I was like, I have some really close friends. And I was like, do you think this is who I am? It's like, I've never seen these things in you. You don't need to listen to this. But I immediately spend time going like, okay, why does this person have this perspective? What view are they getting of me? Whether it's external, maybe they're listening to podcasts, maybe they're stalking me through, you know, who knows? I mean, it's like the John that you knew 20 years ago doesn't exist right. anymore, right?
Right.
I like what you said is like, are you family? What's family for if I can't like be honest with you? And I think sometimes it helps to be able to have that filter, whether it's internal or with somebody that you trust to say, okay, you've seen me at like the darkest that I've ever had, and you've seen me at my highest. If you heard this about me from somebody else, would you be like, I could see that, or is this completely off base, right? Because the people that know you, right? And I like this quote. Ed Sheeran actually said this in a TikTok. So I'm, you know, really trying to be like hip with the kids. But he says, like, if you don't have my phone number, your opinion of me doesn't matter.
Mm.
And he's like, I can't listen to every critic. And I do a podcast every week and I'm in a band and I play all across the country and I put out music and I am a persona that people interact with once a week, maybe for 10 minutes. And they define me in a way based on whatever inputs they have. And I have no control over those.
Right.
And that line is like, if you have an opinion of me and you think one thing of me and you know me, you will text me and be like, dude, you did this thing and that was kind of fucked up. Like, mm-hmm. maybe you should change this. There's a level of like, oh God, okay. Like it carries a weight. But if you don't have my number, you don't know me well enough to share or hold a deep rooted opinion of who I am.
Yeah. I mean, I like the concept, but I also think that, well, first of all, my phone number is in my signature.
I know. Yeah. Everybody has your phone number.
Lots of people have my phone number. But also like the relationship outlives the positive purpose in your life, if that makes yep. sense. And yeah, it's finding that really small group of people. And I'm so lucky that like I have such a close relationship with my husband and he sees and is able to articulate things about me that resonate so deeply that help me with my own self-esteem. Because there are people that are close to me that I respect in my life that like don't show up and wish that I were less vibrant and more complacent and quieter and I tell myself stories like, you know, oh, at the, you know, at Super Bowl, like, should I not have said this one thing? Like, did people think this? And maybe they did, maybe they didn't. But like, that's where we get into trouble. I think it's important to be self-reflective and recognize when we've said things that might have been harmful.
Yeah.
If you're not hurting somebody, like, whatever. Like, it's my life, you know, fuck yeah. you. Like the people that love me are going to love me. And, yeah. and
well, I struggle with trusting that my wife loves me. And I said, that sounds dark and heavy. And I say it with like a soft tone because like, I'm like,
because
I'm
it starts crazy. With you.
I'm crazy. Like what is going, why are you here? How do you put up with
this? I mean, I've worked through that with Dan many times.
Okay, let me know what I need to do. Cause I'm getting there.
Well, I think it starts with you. I mean, you said yeah. it yourself. You really don't love yourself. I mean, I actually have a spiritual healer these days.
Ooh.
She's amazing. Yeah, I never even knew what that was until I started talking to her. But she said this week, she said, people are always in relation to themselves before they interact with you.
Huh. Oh, that's good.
And it's so true. And so like, and so when somebody's interacting with you and they're being you know, hurtful or whatever. It's like, what are they saying? What is this saying about them?
Yeah.
Which is not a totally novel concept, but that's exactly why you don't trust it. Because if you don't see in yourself all of the wonderful things that I know she sees and that I see, how could you trust that? And so I think that's the work, right? And then once you start to love yourself, then you start to become less reactive, and it kind of breaks these chains that hold you in fear. And it's not easy to do. And we keep fucking up and we keep accidentally hurting people. And then we, you know, think that we're shitty again. But I think what sometimes helps me is thinking of myself as, you know, 5-year-old kid that, you know, went through some stuff too, that was not right. And sometimes I think if I could just go back and just hold her, and like, and I know you said that you, all you want is somebody to tell you you're pretty and hold you, but you know what? You can do that.
Yeah. I've got a body pillow too. So that's helpful.
You what?
I said, I've got a body pillow too, that helps. Oh. With the, yeah.
Yeah. I have a 75-pound horse.
Yeah.
He's a Bernedoodle, but yeah, that helps. But like, but I think that's like sometimes treating yourself with kid gloves really helps.
And I love that.
What's the love that I would give? Because when you think about a kid, it's like, they're so innocent. They don't mean to do anything. They're products of their environment. And, but there's that kid in you still, no matter how old you are, that's still learning. Right. So,
yeah, I like that. I think, trying to go back to those places of like what we didn't get when we were growing up, we now have the ability to give ourselves.
Yes.
And as you know, I mean, you know, time is linear, but at the same time, like that little 5-year-old still lives. And I think about like who I was, and like 3 to 7 was the worst time of my life, is when everything bad happened.
Yeah.
And the things that I've gone through as an adult pale in comparison, right? And I think, aside from like the protection aspect of how I view my kids and my responsibility there, it's also, I tend to forget that like that 7-year-old that went through that is standing in front of these kids right now.
Yes.
You know, and I think that there's like a hardship for me to like accept that 7-year-old had no power and no control over what happened to him. And now I get to take control over what happened to him. And I think, to your point, and I know you talked a little bit about like really wanting to get to like the truth of it. But I do think that there is a moment in my life where I don't ever want it to just be dark. I want there to be hope, and I want to drive hope out of change. So when I talk and I spin things with a positive things, and maybe I speak kinder than I need to, even about like my job and about the things that I want to do or that I can do, like I'm always the first to like lift up everybody around me and the last to say, I fucking did this.
Yeah.
Like I did this.
Yes.
And there are things that because I never want those other 7 or 8 people on my team to be like, well, yeah, but I was there too. It's like, I know. I know. But also, like, you need to do it too. You did this. Like, how do we get that?
Yes. I don't know. You said that your parents were bad missionaries because they never wanted to ask for money.
Yeah.
And they kept getting kicked out because they weren't raising any money. And you said too, like, yeah, that you've been passed over for promotions because you just don't ask for them. And the only way that you've gotten promotions is to change jobs. And so that's why, like, and that's behind all of this, why I was like, okay, John, like, you're painting a really pretty picture and you're, you know, it sounds all great, but like, you know, can we get through that? And because I know that there's some stuff that's holding you back, and but also like a fuck ton that you should be really proud of. Like, you have come really, really, really far.
Yeah.
And that's that, like, thing of like, how do we not lose the drive of where we want to go while also feeling happy and safe where we are. Like I, as an entrepreneur, like nobody becomes an entrepreneur to like worry about money. Like they become an entrepreneur because they want to be like filthy rich and have their PJ and all that. And I do want to be able to afford a PJ, but I won't fly on one because of the environment. Unless I really need to, but anyway, I'm already thinking these things. So, but like, I think, you know, this is how I think. And it's usually when I'm on mushrooms because mushrooms are the best and they help me so much.
I have a story for that too. I have a story for that too.
Oh my God. I can talk. Yeah. I have a lot of mushroom stories, but it just opens my eyes to like what I have and like, I'm already living the dream. Like, yes. Yeah. Am I worried about money? Yes. Do we have to be really frugal? Yes. Can we, as it stands, pay for Maddie's college education when she gets there? No, we're going to have to do a lot of work, but like I have this beautiful family. I have a roof over my head. I don't have to worry about the heat. I don't have to worry about food, you know, and I get to do what I love. And so putting that perspective on it and still like imagining like the $5 million house I'm going to buy in Tiburon. And like, in addition to this house and like all the, like I'm already planning my life of like when I have billions of dollars, but being able to envision that, but also sit in my life and just be so happy and content at the same time. Like that's what I try to do as often.
Yeah. And I think that contentment is probably like the biggest nail that I'm trying to drive right now. It's just like, when I do look at what I have, like I have very little debt. I have no student loans. Like there are things that I have checked off that a lot of people haven't checked off. Like I have, my kids are so healthy and they love me and they like me. Right. And like we can, you know, I can't necessarily go take a month in Europe, but we can go on vacation whenever we want. And, you know, we can do that. I drive a decent car and I've got like a vintage one that I'd like to work on. And like the things that I have every guitar I can imagine. I have the ability to write and release music whenever I want, right? All of these things. But you know, that thing that just is like, this is enough for right now. I'll worry about what's next. Right. And just centering yourself on that moment. And I really hate like toxic positivity where it's like, you're going to fucking crush. Like, and I know that that's like, we're kind of coming out of that model, right? We're like, like the boomers were like all about like, you can do anything, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You're like, well, you fuck the economy and the environment. So like, there are no bootstraps anymore. but this idea that like, I think we need to be more self-referential and you joked about mushrooms, but and I think, you know, we're coming to an hour and a half on this one, Miss Joe Rogan. But the one things that I love about psychedelics, and I don't do them that often anymore because it is illegal in North Carolina. But well, I did.
Hey, you're coming out here also, in May.
That's true. but so I was at a conference here in Raleigh last year, and one of my colleagues from another company that was at this conference gave me some mushrooms, and we went and saw Outkast in an outdoor park, and they handed out all these lights and everybody had glitter, and it was just like, it was I also drank a lot of whiskey and smoked a lot of weed, and it got took a really bad turn at the end of the night. But there was this moment about seeing your inner child. And I think you don't need a psychedelics to do this. You don't need to do anything illicit to do this. But for me, it really helps quiet all of the noise to be able to use a substance of some kind to like speak to that person. And there was a moment in this moment, this trip, if you will, of me like trying to hold my childhood self in a moment that was like, like I said, it did take a turn that went into like something else, but you got to be careful. And I'm not advocating for everybody to just go get stoned. But I do think that within reason, if you can find a way to kind of speak to yourself kindly without everything else and listen to yourself and trust yourself, for me, that's sometimes through psychedelics, sometimes through therapy, sometimes through, you know, a great comic book movie. but like to truly like center yourself on the truest form of you that you can find, and then speak words that you can hear, you will find a moment of peace and a home that I think a lot of us truly are searching for in this life.
Yes.
And it's something that I wish I could achieve naturally. and it is something that I am working towards. And like I said, like the end of that story is like, I also had a realization of like the things that I'm doing in my life aren't necessarily aligning with who I truly want to be. And that turn really kind of turned into like, I need to start something new tomorrow. And in the truest sense, like I went to the barbershop and I shaved my head and I kid you not, like the head shaving thing has been a thing for me. Like it's a form of rebirth. For me, my hair is an identity thing. If you've ever seen me, I've got really curly hair. Mm-hmm. And it's always been somebody's like, oh, it's John. He's got the curly hair. Like that's who he is. My nicknames were for my hair, and it's always been like, if I'm going to start over, I'm starting fresh. Right. And so yeah. I went to this barbershop in like the middle of downtown Raleigh, and this like 55-year-old black man who used to be a preacher shaved my head and talked to me about gospel music, not about Jesus, but about gospel music. And he played some old BB and CC Winans that my mom used to play. And I cried in the barbershop chair, and I cried, and it was like surrounded by men. I was the only white boy in there, and it was the most holy,
crying his eyes out.
The most holy moment that I've had in a very, very long time. And I like two of the guys that were in there next, like one of them was like a business owner and he gave me his card, and the other guy ran a bar, and he's like let me, like I love this moment. And it was just like there was no shame and there was no guilt. And everything was just out the window because I was having an honest moment, and I was having this moment of like, there's things that I need to change about myself that I need to bring back into focus that I have kind of let go because I've used it as an excuse because I have anxiety and because I do these things and I did that thing. And it's like, no, fuck that. Like take control. Right. So anyways.
Well, and watching you say that, it's like, I'm just thinking in my head, like how could you possibly not love yourself?
You know? That's another, I don't want to make light of it. And it's my natural reaction to joke, to take the focus away. So I hear you. And it's something that I absolutely need to speak more to myself because the people that are the closest to me speak it to me every day.
And I really do believe that our minds are so powerful.
Yeah.
And you choose which thoughts you listen to.
Mm-hmm. And it's a practice. That's what it's yes. a practice. It's not yes. a perfection. And I yes. talked to this with my 12-year-old who deals with anxiety. And I do believe that he is going to have a much better life because his father also deals with anxiety.
Yeah.
And I have to say, you're hearing my emotions. You're not hearing my heart, you know, and like we need to separate those things. And it's like, I have to tell him, like, I drop him off every morning and I say, you are smart, you are capable, and people like you. And I go, and if they don't like you, and his joke is always like, punch him in the face. And I was like, well, I was like, if they don't like you, they don't matter, you know? And it's like, he jokes, and it's really fun to kind of have those moments with him. But I know that if somebody every morning told me that I was capable, that I was smart, that I was intelligent in a way that I could hear with humor and with softness, then the voices in my head today would be vastly, vastly different because he's developing right now. And I don't want him to go through what I'm going through as a 41-year-old father and husband dealing with this self-doubt of, am I good enough? Am I smart enough? Well, do people actually like me, or are they just lying to me? You know?
Can you do me a favor?
Sure.
For the next 30 days.
Oh my God, you're going to give me homework?
I'm going to give you homework. You be that person in the morning.
For myself.
For yourself.
Yeah. What's that? What was that movie? Oh my gosh. It's the girl. You are beautiful. You are.
Oh my God. Well, there's that YouTube. Have you seen the YouTube of the curly haired girl and she's in the bathroom?
No, I haven't.
And she's like, I am smart and I am beautiful. No, I love my hair. I love my life. I love my clothes. I love my bathroom. I love my toothbrush. And she's just like going on and on and on. I'll have to link it in the show notes. It's so good. It's so good.
Yeah. But like those moments where it's like, we talk about those like cringe moments, like, but those of us that don't hear it in our own head see that. And we're like, oh yeah, that deep, that's deep. That hits.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes you got to fake it till you make it too.
Yeah. It's why it's called the practice.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, all right.
Well, John.
Sarah.
Thanks for all the, you know, customer success insights.
Okay, for like 30 seconds, we should talk about QBRs. I'm kidding. Yeah. Don't ever say that word to me again.
If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider rating or writing a review. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button so that you don't miss out on future episodes. I post the videos on YouTube, and you can find the audio version wherever you get your podcasts. My goal is to bring you stories that educate and inspire you. So if you have any questions, comments, feedback, or if you have someone in mind who could be a great future guest, don't hesitate to reach out. I post episodes every other Friday, so I'll see you in 2 weeks. Thank you.